They were three ordinary women on what seemed like a simple mission to find a film they liked. One where women got something to do and not just look pretty or be murdered, which, to be totally honest, has complicated matters a bit. Welcome to Flicking. Yes, it sounds a bit rude. That's the joke.
Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Flicking, in which one of your three lovely hosts picks a film that was big in 2023, and we talk about it. So today I am joined by... Oh, I'm Hannah Dunleavy. Let's say that. That's important.
Hi, Hannah.
Hello, Hannah Dunleavy. Interesting older lady. I must touch your hair.
I am joined by Yosra Osman.
Hello.
And Mickey Noonan.
Oi, oi.
Who is the person who chose... Well, Mickey, what did you choose?
This month, we watched Poor Things, a racy riff on Frankenstein, written by a man, based on a novel by a man, directed by a man, and pitched by some as one of the hot feminist films of 2023.
What could possibly go wrong?
I am so excited for this chat. Quick yes or no question to start. Do you think men can make a feminist film?
Yes.
By accident?
I think yes, but not all men.
Hashtag not all men.
We're done.
I think no. Great stuff. Let's crack on. Yorgos Lanthimos's Oscar-bothering and indeed Oscar-nabbing 2023 film is a deliberately batshit beast with heavily stylized steampunk sensibilities, a wonky skronky score, and abundant use of the fisheye lens, adding to the odd retro-futurist feel. Based on Alistair Gray's 1992 novel of the same name, adapted for the big screen by Tony McNamara, and starring Emma Stone as protagonist Bella, alongside Mark Ruffalo, Willem Dafoe, Rami Youssef and Christopher Abbott as the men very much shaping her world, Poor Things did pretty well at the box office for something so full-on weird. That might sound a bit damning, but a budget of $35 million and receipts of $114.9 million means it wasn't a wild commercial success. Critics loved it. As is the way with film criticism, this was mostly blokes praising it to the rafters. The Guardian's Peter Bradshaw was beside himself, Hannah, which I think will come as no shock to you.
Of course he was.
Of course he was. But a lot of the women reviewers had plenty of good stuff to say too. Not all of them, though, and I enjoyed Janine T. Abraham's observation that, quote, Poor Things is like watching a perverted student film with a really big budget. Harsh? Yes. Does she have a point? We'll get to that. Why did I pick this? Well, it feels like we've been told a slew of recent films are feminist purely because they have strong female leads. Barbie, Tar, Anatomy of a Fall and Poor Things all being 2022-23 examples. And I've got to say, I saw the trailer for Poor Things and a clip of the dance sequence and I like the look of it. Also, I really like Lanthimos and McNamara's The Favourite, mainly also for a dance sequence, Olivia Colman and the Rabbits.
Yeah, interestingly, I was quite out of sync with everybody else. Great performance by Olivia Colman, but the rest of it left me really cold.
Interesting. Have you seen The Favourite, Yosra?
Yeah, I'm sort of mid with The Favourite. I didn't mind it, but I really like Lanthimos's The Lobster.
Oh, I like The Lobster.
That's a really great film
well,
with
yeah.
Colin Farrell. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Back to Poor Things. Sorry about that. Yosra, you've seen it before, yes?
Yeah, thanks for getting me to watch it again, Mickey.
I will always have West Side Story to deal with, Yosra.
That's true, and you don't know what I'm going to pick next, though.
Okay, well, I'm already nervous. Brilliant. And Hannah, you, like me, watched it fresh but cynical. Is that about right?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. This is probably a film I would never have watched. In fact, I got the chance to watch it on a plane and chose not to. So, although it probably would have been 20 minutes long on the plane. Bearing in mind what I saw in this.
Yeah.
Can I just say, you mentioned the trailer, Mickey. That trailer is so misleading.
Isn't it?
Because you get a vibe from what the film is going to be about, and then you watch it and it's like, oh my gosh, what are we going into here? That trailer tricked me. That's why I saw it the first time.
Oh, we've both been hoodwinked.
Yeah.
Patriarchy, you fucker. Anyway, yeah. With the caveat that this may be unfair to a book I haven't read, and which I gather has been rather monstered itself in this adaptation, the premise is cribbed from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, innit? But with a kindlier monster, and I don't mean Bella. I mean Dr. Godwin Baxter, that's Willem Dafoe, an experimental surgeon who has taken the dead body of a recently suicided pregnant woman, put the brain of the fetus into the woman, and then reanimated her, like you do. Hello, Bella Baxter, a childlike creation who believes Godwin is God, and he is fine with that. Needing help to monitor his ward, he takes on Max McCandles to monitor Bella's rapid growth. Max falls in love with Bella, and wanting to keep her in his sights, Godwin decrees the two must be wed. Bella's sort of fine with it, but wants to explore the world and herself first, so leaves with lawyer and total cad Duncan Wedderburn, that is Ruffalo, for some adventures. And then, for pretty much the rest of the film, Bella finds emancipation through that most male lens of female agency and empowerment, sex. Fucking.
Don't even think it's classed as sex, I think it's just straight up fucking.
Furious jumping, I think she refers to it as. On hearing Godwin is dying, Bella returns home, still content to marry Max, but egged on by a now deranged Wedderburn, the man her body was married to before that woman suicided, comes to claim her back. She goes, turns out he's a Bellen, so she escapes with him getting shot in the process, and, for reasons, she takes him back to Godwin's house and turns him into a man-goat. Godwin dies, Bella marries Max. Okay, right, so let's get it out of the way. Why do you think it's been seen by some as feminist, and you are absolutely allowed to sigh really fucking loudly before starting your answer?
Okay, when I watched this, I thought this struck me as like something that had been written by ChatGPT. If all of ChatGPT had been fed in was Wes Anderson films and old Jezebel articles.
Okay.
So I think people think it's feminism because I think some of the stuff, the sex positivity, the stuff in it speaks to a certain brand of feminism that was in vogue, I would say, in the last 5 years. So I think people are mistaking this for feminism in the same way that they mistake a lot of sex positivity as feminism. I'm probably sex positive, just to get it straight out there. I don't have a prudish bone in my body. I think people should be able to do most of what they like. But I don't think just because a woman's doing it, it classes as feminism. And I think that's what's happening in this film. Even though, like, well, she's a woman making decisions, that makes it feminist.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'd just say that I think actually sort of raunch feminism, sex positive feminism, dates back to the 90s rather than 5 years ago. I think it's got a longer tenure.
I think because of the way sort of online stuff works, it became much, much bigger, sort of sex positive,
and much bigger in the last few years,
which kind of clashed a little bit with what was going on during Me Too, but that's like a whole different matter.
Yeah, I think it's a sex positivity. I think people are looking at the sort of narrative arc of Bella Baxter as the main character. I think some people see it as more of a feminist tale because as she develops more in her brain, she makes her own decisions, as Hannah said, and she kind of resists the influence of the men around her to essentially see more of the world, make her own decisions. And I think some people see that as quite a feminist tale in itself, that she's come from quite a patriarchal world and she's the one who wants to go out and explore and find out more for herself, and she makes all those decisions, particularly in terms of her sexuality herself, which I can kind of understand, but it wasn't really my take watching the film.
Totally. Like, Bella is without doubt a strong female character.
Yeah,
she has agency, but she's also, and I'd argue mostly, fetishized and objectified the entire film.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would just add one other thing, and that's just for me personally. Vicky Pepperdine is in this film, and Vicky Pepperdine is a feminist, and so I thought maybe it won't be that bad because Vicky Pepperdine's in it. So if she can see something positive in it, there must be something positive in it.
Did she have your favourite line?
Yeah, she has quite a few funny lines. I mean, there are funny bits in it. Bits of it made me laugh.
Okay, well, we're going to get to that for sure. I just thought Vicky Pepperdine shouting, "She touched my hairy business," might have been a highlight for you.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, although she could literally have shouted that in almost anything she's ever been in, and it would have worked.
Including
yeah.
like a supermarket.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Bella Baxter, the character, and indeed Emma Stone's portrayal of her. I liked Bella, and I think Stone is genuinely remarkable in the role. I think that Oscar is deserved, with the caveat that I know you two have watched and loved The Holdovers, and I haven't seen that yet. But I also found that Bella is the things we've just been discussing, but also she's sort of a Disney princess slash Disney prostitute. Like, there's this kind of sense of a journey of enlightenment and then a happy ending.
I found her to be like a sentient sex doll, basically. The fact that she's always got her legs open, in almost every scene her legs are open, it just, well, I suppose it points out what this film is saying, is that one of the most interesting things about Bella is between her legs. And I'm sure it's a good performance, but I didn't warm to it in any way. I didn't warm to Bella. I didn't really like her. I felt like she stuck with the walking weirdly bit way too long. There was a period in the film in which she could dance, but then she also still walked in that really odd gait, which again, I think something to do with her legs being open all the time.
She dances very strangely, like a puppet whose strings have been broken. So I don't think she has like got her gait yet. But I think the point you're making is interesting and correct, because her brain has developed like that, but they make her body still ungainly for such a long time.
Doll-like.
Yeah, doll-like.
I think that just fits into Lanthimos's vision of this kind of wacky, zany world and how he portrays those characters. It's interesting you mentioned Disney, because I do think a lot of that is actually Emma Stone's expression. And naturally, she's got a very wide-eyed face that is looking at all of these things with wonder. I actually do really like Emma Stone's performance in this. And I agree with you, Mickey, that it's very well deserved to be able to have that kind of journey and go through what are different developmental stages and make that seem quite realistic. I'm not an actor, I don't know, but that seems like something that would be really, really hard to do.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think she does it really well. And I do like Bella Baxter as a character, but there is part of me that is wondering how much she's exploited in this. So it's not necessarily Bella Baxter I have an issue with, it's what the film is trying to portray as her journey, which just seems quite exploitative to me. One thing I will say, Mickey, I was joking at you about, oh gosh, why did you make me watch this film again? It is a film that I've reassessed my opinion on it several times, because so many people, including a lot of women, absolutely love this film. And they do take it as a real kind of feminist document. It's one of those that I keep thinking over and over. What? Is it me? Am I just not picking something up here?
See, also Promising Young Woman. So I want to talk about issues around consent, because Bella Baxter is given a baby's brain, given a child brain, and Max falls in love with Bella as a baby.
Right.
And then when she leaves with Duncan, having just discovered masturbation, she is still a child. And I think this is just glossed over, isn't it? And I wondered if you think I'm being too sort of protective there, or whether you saw that as well.
No, I think it's icky as fuck.
It's gross. It's really weird. It's almost like the film is trying to present that growing up is all about sex, and it's not. And I find I take real issue with that. And it's back to that exploitative thing. She's being exploited all the way. She's got, when she's with Ruffalo, like you say, she's a 2 or 3 year old mentally. How, just because she's discovered sex herself doesn't mean that it's okay for her to be put in the positions that she's put in. So I totally agree. I found it really uncomfortable.
Exactly that. And also, so this idea that men see sex as emancipation for women, like, I am not a prude either. I'm all for free choice, but the sexual revolution didn't necessarily free women. They just told a lot of women that they were expected to do what men wanted, and that was seen as being free now, right? So it's had a backlash, and this ignores that. But also, apart from Duncan Wedderburn, who I think she chooses, and Max at the end, who she chooses, and the guy who we don't see but who gives her head against the wall, she doesn't choose any of the men.
No.
She becomes a prostitute. So it's not even about choice.
Yeah. And the implication, talking about choice, the implication is that if Willem Dafoe's character did have a dick, he'd probably fuck her too.
Yeah. He does say, I find my paternal feelings override that, but his first thing is, I'm a eunuch, I can't fuck her.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll just stick with being her daddy.
Yeah. And that's all a bit. I find this film just kind of nasty. I just sort of kind of sadistic.
I feel it's misogynist.
I think it is misogynist. I fully agree. I think it is misogynist. But I wonder whether that whole, he's been, you know, he had his dick cut off, is supposed to be read as some sort of feminism thing, that he's been neutered. But I just find a lot of that nasty. A lot of the stuff about the experiments. Probably the best way I can describe this is it's like being in a restaurant and ordering a cake. When the cake arrives, it's got fucking sparklers and hundreds of thousands of like people singing a song. And you were like, I just wanted a cake. I didn't want all the stuff that came on top of it. And I'm sure the cake probably would taste as nice, but all the stuff on top of it is fundamentally what puts me off. This film is there's too much stuff, there's too much sadism. William Dafoe's face is too far. The steampunk is too far. The stylization is too far.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. The music's like bashing your head at one point.
I just thought, my Thomas Anderson, isn't it? It's like, it reminded me of There Will Be Blood, which is one of the worst soundtracks ever. And I feel like this is up there with it. That screeching.
When we went to the theatre, Hannah, recently to see the Pinter, and they just played jazz at us for 20 minutes and we nearly left. I felt a bit like that.
I'm not a prude either, and I'm not one to kind of gawk at sex scenes, but talking of too much, I just think so many of them in this film are just gratuitous. Uh-huh. And it emphasises the whole feeling that I have that this is very much done with a male gaze. It's too much for me.
It's a male gaze through a male gaze through a male gaze. It's like a kaleidoscope of male gaze. I'd love to talk about the other female characters in the film, but we've got Prim, who is Vicky Pepperdine, who is a servant, doesn't get very much to do. And we've got some sex workers, prostitutes, however you want to deem them. And apart from a middle-aged woman or an older woman on a boat, who actually is quite interesting, but they give her very little to do, that's it. That's it in this feminist film.
Jessica Finley Brown as well, as another woman who's had a child's brain or whatever.
Oh, another experiment. She's barely a woman at all.
It makes me laugh that I don't know where you saw this, but where I saw it on Amazon, it came up at the start and it said, warning, contains tobacco depiction. And I was like, is that the thing you've chosen to warn me about, the tobacco depictions?
Maybe it knows you've given up smoking, Hannah, and it's trying to help.
Not the man fucking the woman in front of his kids. We live in funny times, don't we?
All right, Mickey here with an advert for BetterHelp Therapy Online. You all right? Such a small question and sometimes such a big question too, eh? Now, regular listeners will know I am no stranger to depression. And while over time and with the help of some decent counselling and brilliant friends and family, I've established a toolkit to help when the constantly dripping tap of life gets a bit too much. That does not mean I am a stress-free human rainbow skipping through meadows. I mean, who is? We all carry around different stresses, big and small, and sometimes we can deal, and sometimes it's much harder to cope. Life, innit? Right now, I have a teenage puppy to deal with, and although I love her very, very much, she can be a lot. There, said it. And as quick a fix as it seemed to say, I'm fine, and push it all down into the big inside box and put that lid on. For me, that hasn't been a great long-term solution, in that if I don't get it off my chest, it will at some point come bubbling up, and it's never been one to pick its moments in a good way. I find talking means I can avoid it exploding out of me like a messy emotional volcano all over my nana's carpet. Also, during my various times in talk therapy, I discovered that saying something out loud or writing it down can make it seem much more manageable than allowing it to swirl around and grow ever bigger in my head. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I've found knowing how to reach out is sometimes the toughest bit, but BetterHelp is entirely online. Boom. Which means it couldn't be easier. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist, then work your sessions around your schedule. With more than 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Standard Issue listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/standard. That's betterhelp.com/standard.
Just thinking about the male gaze and a bit of difference between, I think, the novel and the film is that I think in the novel, the story is told from McCandle's point of view.
It is.
And then Bella Baxter refutes it and says, this isn't true. This is not what happened. It was actually really morbid. you know, completely refutes it, which they didn't choose to adapt into the film, which I think for me is quite an interesting change, because at least in the book, you've got that understanding of, well, actually, no, it wasn't all positive for Bella Baxter, and she's refuting all of this. But in the film, it's still kind of this, it was a really positive experience, and how great that Bella Baxter has agency. And I'm just thinking, I'm wondering why they might have chosen to tell the story this way, when we're thinking about all the things that we're talking about in terms of male gaze and how feminism is explored in the film. It could have been different if they decided to keep that sort of narrative from the book.
Totally. That isn't sexy enough to put in this film, right?
It's things like when we're talking about agency and the fact that, for example, Bella decides to become a sex worker, it like glosses over why women become sex workers. They don't all do it by choice. Uh-huh. And the way that that's all filmed, it's almost dangerously lighthearted. And I don't know if this is me now reading too much into all of it and perhaps just being a bit too critical. But for me, it goes even worse off the rails when we get to the Paris section.
Well, I would agree, Yosra, but I also think a lot of third wave feminism promotes the argument that all sex work can be positive when it, you know, not if...
Oh, no, I'm not disputing that.
Yeah, but it... So I feel like that just... No, I'm agreeing with you, I'm saying. But I think it's thriving on this area that, like I say, is kind of the forward-facing feminism that has been really quite popular recently. And it glosses over some fundamental problems, like you say, of why, you know, addiction and abuse and all of the things that drives a lot of women going into it. And absolute poverty, because as we find out, she's actually still got money in her pocket.
Well, she's not at that. By the time she, and I'm going to put it in inverted commas, chooses to become a prostitute, she doesn't have money because Ruffalo's character has legged it with all of it. So she is in sort of dire straits, but the film, I agree with both of you, the film kind of hints that, hey, but women, are you ever really in trouble? Because you've got something that men can't do, and yeah, that is you can just yeah. sell your body
yeah.
and be empowered. And that can fuck off into a bin forever, as far as I'm concerned.
I could say something else that really grated on me on this film is that she is hoodwinked by those guys to give all that money yeah. away. And yeah. then it's just never spoken about it again. There's no repercussions for anyone in it. So not only is she a woman who's basically 95% Fanny, according to this film, she's also like an idiot. Like, they just say, look at her, she can't even give her money, and she doesn't even know what to do with it.
I think that plays into her still being very naive and childlike, which again raises the huge red flags of the lack of consent, really, within the totality of this film, until maybe she gets back to Godwin's.
By that point, when she goes back to Godwin, she's developmentally a lot older, isn't
yes,
she?
So yes.
That, yeah.
Would she choose to marry a man who fancied her as a baby, though? I don't know. I find that weird.
Yeah.
That
was such a good noise, Yasmin.
That was me watching the film, Mickey.
Mark Ruffalo is having the whale of his life. You know, as much as I have a lot of bad things to say about this film, I didn't hate it. I laughed out loud a lot. And I think Mark Ruffalo is absolutely cracking in it. He's basically me in a girls' school after midnight. Well, I never.
Not work out what the fuck his accent is. And I don't think he can work it out either. It changes the whole time. Sometimes it's really American. Sometimes it's like he's going to Austrian or something. It's very strange. I do think he's at his absolute best when he completely loses it and he's just outside literally pulling his hair out. Yeah.
I like it when he's got his head on the bar and she just pats him and goes, you are a very confusing person, Duncan Wedderburn. Yes, you are.
But, yeah, it's a good performance, but much like Emma Stones, I couldn't warm to this film in any way that I could come away and think, oh, that was brilliant. There was always a sort of barrier between me and fully engaging with this. So I just kept thinking, it's really misogynist. Now I think a little bit less of Mark Ruffalo than I did previously.
Do you think the weirdness is there as a protective removal from accusations of misogyny?
Yeah.
Yes, says Yosra immediately. Yeah.
No, I genuinely think that. You know, when I've had a lot of discussions about this film because I'm the only person really in my friendship group that didn't like this film.
Oh, I'm so sorry you have to get new friends,
welcome
Yosra.
To your people, Yosra.
Hey, about my tribe. So it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of people talk about the kind of wackiness of it, the weirdness, and the fact that Lanthimos, he likes a bit of the weird, he likes the grotesque, that's his style. And it's not that deep when I bring up the kind of issues around feminism and stuff. And I do think it's kind of like painting over some of that to just portray this amazing looking weird world. And yeah, that's another thing that kind of riles me up, because that seems to be what people want to talk about, and that's very much Lanthimos' vibe, and I totally get that, but it doesn't hide for me a lot of the issues that we've talked about. I think what's interesting is that the lobster, which I did like, I think it makes some really, really interesting points about who we choose to get in relationships with and how we obsess on similarity when in fact it's quite often differences that make you click with people. And I feel like it's got something to say, but fundamentally, under all of this, I really don't know what it's trying to say about anything. I don't feel like that there's a deeper message other than the message that my brain will not take in, which is that a woman can only be truly liberated if she is sexually liberated.
It's like they took Frankenstein, a novel written by a brilliant woman about man and God complexes, and they made that shitter. And then they took Poor Things, written by Alice de Grey, which was, I haven't read it, but like sounds like it is a much more thoughtful, nuanced exploration of female agency and a man's delusions. And they made that shitter. And this is what we've got.
And I wonder if, when you say, what is it trying to say, Hannah? I don't know what, if they're trying to say anything, really. If it's just about the kind of world building and the character building, and that's what it is. And it's everybody else's readings into the film that are kind of taking it down another level. Because I must say, one of the things that I think made me dislike this film more was hearing from other people that it was supposedly a feminist film.
Well,
but I don't remember Lanthimos saying that, and I don't think, and I'm not sure, it's just other people's perspectives that maybe shaped my reaction to it when I watched it.
Do you know what it really reminded me of? Not in the style of the film, but in the sort of the reaction to it, is Crash. Not the dirty Crash, which I suppose it is like in a number of ways, but the other Crash.
The Sandra Bullock Crash.
The Sandra Bullock one. In the sense that got all of this rapturous response and Oscars, you know, and held up as being about, you know, this incredibly important topic. And then people went, within about 2 years, people were saying, hang on, dude, this is about racism. Why is? And then it sort of got picked apart. And I feel like this will not age well. I mean, this will be the thing that turns up on lists in 20 years' time where people were saying, oh my God, that was made in the 2020s. Can you believe it? In the same way that it's sort of people, like you say, Yosra, people were so sort of wrapped up in their perception of what the message was that they didn't notice that actually, had this film been made by women and still been exactly the same, I feel like I would have to like then concede perhaps it's me that's missing something in this. But I don't actually think three women would turn out that.
No,
I don't think that's
all. I feel like, do you know, if you want to watch some filth, like, go and watch some filth. Don't have to have it disguised as highbrow cinema. Like, you do you, but, you know, it doesn't have to win an Oscar.
I saw an argument online in an article somewhere, I think it was in The Independent, that it should have won Best Film.
What? A few people do think that. I know quite a few people that have it in their top three of last year. And I'm not going to criticise that, but I that's why I've sort of reassessed all the time, because I'm thinking, what have I missed here? Because I really did not take to this film.
Yotta, which time round did you hate it more, first or second?
I think probably first, just because I was so surprised by what I was watching. Second time, I knew what I was in for.
And were you excited that you were probably going to share opinions that other women agreed with? Instead of them going,
it was
what?
Quite nice, because when you said it, I was really excited actually, because I thought, oh, I bet Mickey and Hannah will have similar opinions to me. That will be really nice to be in a safe space where I can talk and not be like, what about?
I'm so sorry. This is how you find out you're actually a middle-aged white woman, Yosra.
Oh, God.
But you're very welcome. I'm kind of I'm glad I've seen it, because I think having seen the trailer and read the discussions around it, I had to watch it. So I'm glad it's done and dusted, but it's not one I will return to. And I'm assuming that twice was more than enough for you, Yosra, and once way too much for you, Hannah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I suppose I'm glad I've seen it, in that, you know, there are a number of things in the world that I would like to have an opinion of, but since I haven't read it or watched it, I can't. Because I definitely am one of those, you can't criticise stuff until you've read it, you know, or watched it, or in whatever format it comes in. You've enabled me to enter a debate. So thank you, Mickey. I now get to have an opinion on it. Can I just revisit that point you made about the men write feminist stuff that we said at the start, the right feminist stuff?
Yeah, could you both disagree with me? Because I don't think men can be feminists. I think they can be allies and they should do that. But, you know, that's my opinion.
I would say, looking at, it's not a film, but we're just talking about work of art. So if you look at Orphan Black, which was accidentally one of the most feminist things on television, because some men sat down to write a thing about a woman who didn't own her own body. Somebody else technically owned her body and accidentally stumbled on feminism in the, you know, questions about contraception or conception or abortion or all of those things suddenly became, they realised how important it was. So I think it's possible, but I think not if they set out to write it. If they set out to write it, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, and I think I was thinking about it more as we talked about it in terms of, I don't think men can alone, you know, create a feminist tale. It would have to be something where they're working with women. So, for example, in this film, if Lanthimos directed it and had a team of women writers or something that could kind of influence the decisions. I've been thinking that question. I've been thinking about it more as we've talked about it. And yeah, maybe I should lean more towards the no rather than the yes, but that doesn't mean I think it's impossible.
I don't mean it meanly when I say no. I just don't think when you're a male, you can remove the male gaze. That's just the gaze you've got.
Yeah.
Social conditioning is one hell of a drug, guys. Yosra, I felt slightly threatened when you mentioned it was your choice.
Yeah, because I suffer too in this. Let's remember that.
But what are we watching?
I don't know what you're going to think of this one. I decided to go a little different. I didn't want to go for one of the big hitters. I wanted to go for one of my actual favourites from last year. And it's a film called Theatre Camp, which you can find on Disney Plus. It's a kind of satirical look at musical theatre, and I find it really funny, so I'm going to choose that.
Actually, Yosra, that sounds delightful. I don't know what I was braced for, but it wasn't that. So.
I'm not going as far as to say it sounds delightful, but, you know, I'll try not to go in cynical.
I'll take that.
Standard issue for all women.